50 years ago today, American composer Charles Ives died in New York City. He's considered one of this country's greatest composers, though during his most creative period, Ives didn't have a single public performance, and when he showed his music to people, they told him he was crazy. Biographer Jan Swafford says the music of Charles Ives manages to be both nostalgic and prophetic.
There are lots of definitions of genius, and one is this: somebody who puts together unlikely things and makes them stick. No composer ever did that more extravagantly than the great Yankee maverick Charles Ives. This is Ives's first surviving piece from when he was 13, a march for band. He was the son of a Danbury, Connecticut bandmaster named George Ives, who possessed a great curiosity about sound. George gave his organ prodigy son a traditional training in music, but he also taught Charlie to sing a tune in one key while he was accompanied in another. Young Charlie watched his father march two bands around Danbury Common in opposite directions, playing different tunes, to see what it sounded like as they passed. George Ives told his son two things nobody had ever told a young composer before: any kind of music is worthwhile, if it's earnest and authentic, and any combination of notes at all is acceptable, if you know what you're doing with them. Charlie took up that unprecedented gift of freedom and ran with it. By the time Charles Ives started musical classes at Yale in 1894, he already had in his imagination harmonies, rhythms, and conceptions nobody else would discover for decades. 4 years of conventional studies at Yale failed to dent his singular psyche. After college, suspecting that the music he wanted to write would never earn him a living, Ives went into the life insurance business in Manhattan. He co-founded what became the biggest agency in the country. Meanwhile, he composed furiously, nights and weekends, at first in two distinct directions. There were relatively traditional European-derived pieces, but with an American accent, like his Second Symphony. At the same time, Ives was writing small experimental pieces, like the Ragtime Dances, a kind of cubistic screwball comedy vision of the style, and a portrait of New York in the Ragtime era. In 1908, Ives married the daughter of a Hartford clergyman. Harmony Ives considered her husband a genius, a spiritual force, and also the funniest man alive. The overwhelming love they shared, they called a parcel of the divine love, and their means of spreading that love into the world would be Charlie's music. At that point, the traditional and experimental streams of Ives's music joined into his mature voice, a voice at once unique and as familiar as a tune whistled in childhood. Ives rediscovered the sense of wonder he had felt about all music as a small-town boy, and he found ways to put that wonder into notes on a page. His work, for all its originality, is often a texture of allusions to familiar American tunes. Ives is a kind of Walt Whitman in sound, enfolding myriad voices in a transcendent vision. When the grown-up Ives wrote a march, it wasn't just a tune. It was the whole parade, exalted in memory. Ives wrote music simple and complex, traditional and revolutionary, sometimes all on the same page. If he prophesied the future of music, he never turned away from the past. He joined the voices of everyday Americans with the scope and ambition of the great European tradition. All Ives' finest work, even at its most uproarious, is religious in spirit, flowing from the personal through the national toward the eternal. Thus the mystical ending of his epic Fourth Symphony, whose melody and meaning take off from an old hymn, Nearer, My God, to Thee.
Jan Swofford is a composer and the author of biographies of Brahms as well as Charles Ives. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.